Once we've completed our pattern groupings, it is time to get into the really fun part and asking a lot of questions. So we know which blocks and restrictions are part of the same pattern. Now we get to find out the specific why and what that set these patterns into motion. So you're about to graduate from dowsing protocols, so it is time now to engage your thinking mind. Now, the process of coming up with a soul story is very much just about employing reason and logic and your understanding of human nature. And you do understand human nature because you are human and you've participated in human stories your entire life just by observing people, by reading books, by watching TV. There's a lot of storylines that are very, very similar in the human experience. They're very archetypal. So until now, you've just been gathering information like a detective gathering clues, but now it's time to put the pieces together. Now, you will want to treat each negative karmic pattern completely separately. Each pattern represents one comprehensive soul story that you have to figure out. Please never edit your grouping process or start pulling blocks and restrictions from separate patterns into the one you're working on. That's just a great recipe for massive confusion. Please be disciplined. Trust that you group them correctly, and there's always a comprehensive story behind the blocks and restrictions, just the way you group them. Because if you start mucking around and adjusting your grouping based on what you think the story is, then you're letting your opinion and your imagination lead the way, and we really don't want to do that. That can impact your accuracy a lot. Just focus on the negative karmic pattern that you're working on right now. So you really just want to take them separately. That also prevents overwhelm because there are going to be clients that present with five different patterns that you're going to have to figure out. Now, some of them may be really straightforward. The thing is, you don't know that until you ask questions. So really just focus one at a time, completely separately, and that way you're never going to get overwhelmed, and that kind of discipline does lead to greater accuracy. So the first piece of information you can establish for each pattern is when was it set into motion? Remember, we're always grouping blocks and restrictions by lifetime. So, first thing you'll want to ask is this pattern a past life or present life pattern? For past life, you want to ask how many lifetimes ago did my client instigate this negative karmic pattern? And if it's present life, you'll want to ask at what present life age did my client instigate this negative karmic pattern? Now, please note, we've not lived thousands or even hundreds of lifetimes. Most past life patterns will most likely come from 2 to 20 lifetimes ago. Occasionally, you can find older ones, but I've yet to find any going back more than 60 lifetimes. Remember, we always have the opportunity to make a new choice and correct these negative karmic patterns. So it's rare that these patterns linger for more than, say, 20 lifetimes because, we may be hard-headed, but eventually we do learn. All right? It may take us a few lifetimes, but a lot of times we do resolve these eventually on our own. We're just doing it the long way, taking 14 lifetimes to do it. So soul realignment is a tremendous shortcut to that process. Now, when you're looking at present life age, I suggest you give a range of about 3 to 5 years to the client. This happened around the age of 18 to 20, or this happened around the age of 5 to 8. Because these are often ongoing situations, it's not like one single event. So, in order for a negative karmic pattern to take hold in our divine soul blueprint, it takes, consistently making the same kinds of choices. So, that's why you'll want to give kind of an age range so that your client can relate to it. Now, remember too that past life refers to when the negative karmic pattern just started. Obviously, it's still being continued by the client today, or it wouldn't show up in their records anymore. Now let's talk about where to start. So the best place to start your investigative process is with any root cause block and restriction present in the pattern. Now, occasionally you might have multiple root cause blocks and restrictions. So you might have one pattern with an implant, a vowel, a constraint, a few attaching soles, soul loss, a golden web tear, and memory issues. Now, you might think that that's a lot and it might look overwhelming at first glance, but all you'll want to do is ask, well, which came first? The implant, the vowel, or the constraint? That's where you'll want to start your investigative process. So now that you know when the pattern started, it's time to investigate the who. And the first thing you want to find out for past life issues is, hey, was my client incarnated as male or female in that lifetime? Remember, souls can incarnate as either gender, and knowing the gender of your client will really shape the perspective of the story, and it's key to figuring it out. Obviously, this question is totally unnecessary for present life issues, which should go without saying, but I thought I'd mention it. Now, for most past life root cause blocks and restrictions, we want to find out who the other people involved were. Remember, we usually create any negative agreements and attachment mechanisms with actual people in our lives, and it's usually those closest to us. So if you encounter blocks and restrictions that must by definition involve one or more other people, then the next step is to find out the relationship our client had with those people in that lifetime. So for example, if you have a negative intention placed on the client three lifetimes ago, you'll want to find out, well, who placed it? If you have three attaching souls in that same pattern, chances are all three of them place that negative intention, although you'll want to ask. But you need an attachment mechanism, so unless there's other attachment mechanisms, then all three attaching souls will share that mechanism. Now, on the other hand, you may only have one or even no attaching souls. You just need to engage some reason here. Negative intentions most likely come from spouses, lovers, parents, siblings, our children, relatives, or close friends. And occasionally they might come from business associates. I mean, think about whose opinion really matters to us. If you have negative unjustified karma present in the pattern, the question is, well, who did my client cause harm or have the perception of causing harm? Again, we don't create negative unjustified karma with total strangers. We usually don't have the occasion to mistakenly do harm to them. Instead, the people that we might mistakenly hurt are those closest to us because we neglect them or don't pay attention or we're just not aware. If you have a constraint present for the client, you know your client surrendered their free will to somebody. Well, that somebody would be a perceived authority figure. We don't surrender our free will to someone if we don't believe in their authority. So you've got to go, well, who's in authority over us ever? Especially if it's 15 lifetimes ago. Well, there's our parents, maybe some older relatives, an older sibling. Usually it's people that are generationally older than us. Then if you look at other authority figures, it could be educational authority figure, like a teacher. It could be a spiritual authority figure, like a priest. That's kind of it, right? I mean, who else would we allow to engage with us in a constraint? Who do we surrender our free will to? It's really not that many people, certainly not a total stranger. Now, for an implant, the who is usually an organization of some kind, right? Military, political, religious, social, educational, financial, there's not that many options. And this kind of logical thinking will come up with who else played a role in your client's negative choices. So you can just ask, who placed this constraint on my client three lifetimes ago? Was it a parent? Was it a family member? You know, you just keep going until you get a yes. Was it their spouse? And suddenly you go, yes. And it's like, oh, great. You know, people did see their spouses as authority figures once upon a time, so that makes sense. And then you can get on with constructing the story from there because, you know, if you think about relationship dynamics, we have different relationships with our parents than we do with our spouses. So now you already have more information that will guide you in what to ask next. Now, You'll also want to uncover how the client was and still is affected by these blocks and restrictions. And that will also help you figure out what questions to ask next to find out exactly how the pattern came about. And that's where programs and energetic statements come in. So you'll want to use your programs and energetic statements chart to douse for what program is being run by any implants, attaching souls, and negative guides that might be present for your client. Now be disciplined. We just want one program for each of these when they're present. Specificity is always the key to helping the client gain consciousness of how their negative karmic patterns are affecting them. So more is not better, more gets muddy. So we always just want one program, one energetic statement. Now, as mentioned previously, programs run at either the mental or emotional body at one specific chakra. Notice that we get really specific here. Now, obviously, if we've got a mental body program, those thoughts are going to affect how we feel. And an emotional body program will generate feelings that, of course, will affect how we think. But all we want is to get to the root of how the issue is really affecting the client. Now, by no means do you have to be an expert on chakras for this to understand how the client is being affected. It's actually really simple. You know, I've made this little chart for you. Chakra number one, programs running at chakra number one will affect connection to tribe, society, and family. Chakra number two will affect money and sexuality. Chakra number three will affect self-esteem and personal goals. Chakra number four, relationship with others and ourselves. Chakra number five will affect communication and self-expression. Chakra number six will affect intuition, vision, and our personal truth. Chakra number seven will affect our personal freedom and our ability to choose. And chakra number eight will affect our common sense and rational thought. So for example, if you've got a program of doubt running at the third chakra mental body, that will have us doubting our abilities, doubting whether we can achieve our goals. It'll have us second-guessing ourselves as to what our goals really are and will probably result in endless planning. Now, on the other hand, if you have that same program of doubt, but now it's running at the fourth chakra emotional body, now we doubt our feelings. Our feelings about ourselves, our feelings about others, they may cause us to sabotage our relationship because now we're inconsistent. We have a lack of commitment because we're always doubting our feelings about our relationships. Meanwhile, if you have that same program of doubt, but now it's affecting the sixth chakra mental body, now we're just second guessing our vision for our life and whether we really see the truth about ourselves and others, and that will create a great deal of insecurity and mistrust. So a program of doubt can look really different depending on what chakra it's affecting and whether it's affecting the mental or emotional body. And you just really want to put them together, think a little bit about it, but it gives you so much insight as to what's going on for the client today, but also gives you insight as to what may have caused the negative karmic pattern to be set into motion to begin with. So programs tell us so much, and usually it's also the programs that help the client truly relate to the blocks and restrictions and really claim responsibility for them. Now, if independent negative thought forms are present for your client, you'll also want to find out through what energy the client is engaging with them and at what specific chakra. So it's almost like programs, not quite, but they're pretty specific. Energetic statements are less specific. They are overall energetic experiences. They're not associated with a specific chakra. They're also not associated with a mental or emotional body. They just are more generalized energetic experiences. And you will want to douse for energetic statements for negative unjustified karma, negative thought forms, negative intentions, bargains, and constraints. Those are the blocks and restrictions you need energetic statements for. We don't need energetic statements for vows or contracts because the nature of the vow or contract itself implies how the client is being affected. We've talked about contracts of healing versus a soulmate contract and vows of sacrifice versus vows of obedience. We really don't need more information than that. Similarly, we don't need an energetic statement for anger spears or compassionate connections. Obviously, it's just anger and compassion, pretty straightforward. Now, the energetic statement for a negative unjustified karma will tell you what the client is blaming themselves for, sort of the overall energetic experience of having made the mistake. Usually it's guilt, not always, but most of the time. It can also sometimes be shame, but this is how they're experiencing their own mistake. The energetic statement of a negative intention is the energy that the client was intentioned with. So victimization, for example, will always have them acting like victims, and they will accordingly attract perpetrators and bullies into their experience. The energetic statement of a constraint indicates how the client was basically manipulated into surrendering their free will. So a constraint of fear will constantly have them do what others want because they are afraid of them. They're afraid of losing them. They're afraid of losing safety, security, love, but there's always fear. Now, a constraint of self-doubt, on the other hand, will constantly have the client do what other people tell them to do because they think others will know better. So they'll constantly abdicate responsibility in favor of expert advice. They also surrendered their free will initially by telling themselves someone else knew better what they should do than they themselves did. So again, these energetic statements give us a lot of information. Whether we're afraid of someone and surrender our free will to them, or whether we think, oh, that person knows better. I don't know anything. They must know better because they're, you know, a priest or a parent or an older sibling. So, oh, and I'll just do what they say rather than trusting myself. Pretty straightforward, but it really shapes the picture. Now, remember, bargains are an exchange where one thing is given up for another, and you'll want to gain a clear understanding of what the real life agreements and choices are. So the energetic statement of the bargain is how the bargain is affecting the client overall. For example, someone who trades their integrity for wealth might show up with a bargain of self-loathing or anger. Knowing programs and energetic statements will help you figure out exactly how and why the client created that negative karmic pattern. And we're going to go deeper into more questions, but the first thing you always want to do is find out when, who the client was, if it's past life, were they male or female? And then for any blocks and restrictions where other people would have to have been involved, you'll want to find out, well, who else was involved? And then you'll just want to check on the programs and energetic statements before you go on. So this is how you already develop a framework for gathering the entire soul story. But with that information, you really have a lot to go on already, so you'll know what to ask next.